We're coming, and we ain't backing down.
We don't need a bunch of cats in here looking in the mirror.
I'm bitterly disappointed with the officiating today.
Guys being dudes.
And they run through our like through a tin horn, man.
Thank you, Lee. Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening. Stephen Godfrey, how are you?
You went with the Truman Show opening. Why is that?
I don't know. You know, actually, you know what it is that I just watched a TV show that was very Truman Show-y. Jury Duty, you seen it yet?
I have not. I've seen a lot of Bluey.
They real life Truman Showed this guy. In the context of a skit about a civil jury trial in America, they did it for humor. Okay. They did it for humor, and it was good. And something else that we hope will be good will be this podcast this week. It's just me, Alex Kirshner, and you, Stephen Godfrey. Richard Johnson is out in the field this week. Stephen, we've got some business to discuss quickly before we get into, you know,
got a lot of business.
Podcast
a lot of
before we get into podcasting. First off, what are you doing June 15th?
Going to SED. Well, I don't know. I haven't bought my ticket yet, but I'm supposed to go to SED Live.
Why not?
SplitZoneDuo.com Live.
No, wrong.
Actually, it's no. That was a joke, Alex. I know it's SplitZoneDuoLive.com.
SplitZoneDuoLive.com. Why don't you tell the listeners, the smart, attractive, wise listeners, what it is that we are doing in Washington, D.C. on June 15th?
This is our first ever live show. If you've ever wanted to be a part of the test kitchen of this podcast experience, buddy, you better buckle up because we'll be debuting, let's call them concepts. That sounds like 2023 brandy enough. Live event concepts and content. I've had people ask. We are recording the show, a portion of which will be released. We are not. This was a big question I got recently. It was. There, did you know people have like really strong opinions on, hey, I listen to this podcast and I love it, but when they do a live episode that was taped in front of a live audience, I really, really like it or I really, really don't. Were you familiar with this?
I'm familiar with that.
So we are going to take a portion of this show, our debut show, our inaugural live show in front of a live audience, and we will put it up at splitzoneduo.com. It'll be for our patrons. We will also do segments that will only, I guess, not appear. You'll have to be there to experience them. We will be doing, I guess that's really off the record Q&A, isn't it, Alex? Technically, it's an off the record Q&A.
Off the record.
You have to be there.
Please don't record it because that will allow us to have more fun. It's very exciting. You'll get a gift if you attend. You'll get food and drink specials all night. We will hang out after and maybe before as well. And you'll just get to meet a lot of people who like college football in a similar way that you do. So splitzoneduolive.com for that.
Mm-hmm. If you have not bought a ticket yet, I would strongly encourage that you do that now because we set out, Alex, with an initial size of what we thought would show up. We are quickly pushing past that. So we kind of have to make a decision. Are we going to go bigger in our space? What are we going to do? This is a very good problem to have. However, if you are a loyal listener and you're on the fence, buy your ticket now before we make that decision. splitzoneduolive.com. These things are scarce.
If you are a patron for splitzoneduo.com, check the Patreon page or check your inbox. There's a discount code in there for you to save $10 off your ticket. We'd love to see you there. One of the great parts of that night, by the way, is that some of our dear friends from Home Field Apparel will be involved in that evening. We're still sorting out some of how that will look, but it's going to be a ton of fun with them. Go to homefieldapparel.com. It's the only place you need to go for premium vintage, extremely comfortable collegiate apparel. Stephen, podcasting is now a visual medium for us. So if you're watching us on the Split Zone Duo YouTube channel or a social clip somewhere, you might see that I am in a pit like baseball tee right now from Home Field. And you are, is that Wyoming?
It's very nice.
That Wyoming that we got there?
This is the mascot Steamboat. I'll throw my chest up. That is the mascot Steamboat, which is a horse. It's not the man on the horse. It is the horse. And then at the very bottom, it's going to say Fight Wyoming Fight. But if you're a hardcore, there it is. Okay. So if you know, you know, hashtag Powder River. It's nice to wear my Wyoming stuff sometimes because there's not like I did a lot of gray and white home field. It's nice to have a little bit of color, especially when you are a gaunt, pale human being as I am. You know, the brown, it does well. I think I'm a little bit of a fall. I think it's helping my T-zone right now, too.
If you use the promo code SZD20, you'll get 20% off your first order at Home Field. You can also get deals that are just as good, sometimes even better, if you go to the, if you download the Homefield app, and there are daily deals on there for really, really cool college shirts. So check them out. Homefieldapparel.com. Thanks a ton to them for their longstanding support of this program. And Stephen, while we just close out business here before we actually do our podcast for the week, a couple things. Instagram.com/splitsandduo. Wrestling story time from your past
life. I'm a man of my word. A man of my word.
Do we have an exact date on that, or are you just saying you're going to do it like in the next week or two?
Well, so I hedged the bet because I want to, you know, I understand rate of growth and I'm reasonable. And it's not like we signed up a bunch of, you know, like Chinese hacker bots or something to fill out our populace here. But I said 5,000, we'll start doing wrestling story time Q&A because that has been the, one of the most requested, probably the most requested non-college football thing I've received. And then I said, all right, we're kind of starting the Instagram out of nothing. I think we had like 1,000 or something followers just where we just kind of threw up an Instagram last year. We did a couple posts. You guys went to 2,500, I believe, was the original agreement or the second agreement that I made. And I said, I'll tell a Hulk Hogan story on there. So I need to do that. And I'm going to do that. And it will be on the Instagram. This is even, this isn't even a patron thing. However, I'm throwing this out there. You want to do a regular Q&A? You want there to be regular wrestling content? I need an Instagram with at least 5,000 followers. Transitioning over. I just literally yell out the word transition. I'm not like Alex. This is a friendly reminder. We've had a nice bit of Patreon growth in an otherwise dead season. A lot of you jumped on for the Hugh Freeze stuff. Maybe you're jumping on because we've been teasing the return of a very, very popular show called Dead Letters, which is coming soon. Maybe you came in for Richard's new scheme school. I'm fine with whatever reason you came. We're getting closer to the official Split Zone Duo blindside commentary track. Basically, director's commentary, even though I did not direct the film, nor was I ever on set. I did read the script before the film was made because it was sent to me by hashtag sources. I am still a man of my word. 5,000, we're getting close to that patron number. The moment it happens, I stop what I'm doing. I procure a copy of The Blind Side. Really going to have an issue with myself if I have to pay for it, but I probably will. Maybe I'll just shoplift a DVD. The problem is that I have to find a DVD. Anyway, Alex is making a face because I'm talking about shoplifting. If you guys hit 5,000 on that, I immediately stop what I'm doing and we go full on commentary track. If you, Alex, do you know what a commentary, like, do you know what I'm talking about?
I do.
This kind of podcast.
They used to be on the DVD menu when you would buy
and
a
then,
DVD.
And then podcasts started doing them. Like, if you're a fan of Kevin Smith, he would do this with his own films, or he would do this with, like, Star Wars movies or Batman movies or whatever. In various nerd corners of the world, you can have people who are no longer, you know, certainly not associated with a film, and then you turn the movie on, you put it on mute, and then you turn the podcast on at the same time, and it's like watching a film you've seen many, many times, or hopefully not in the case of Blindside, you've seen many, many times. Hopefully you only suffered through it at least once, or maybe you've never seen it, and I'm going to introduce you to a terrible film. But you will watch that film with me. 5,000 patrons.
Terrible.
I'm
film.
A man of my word.
He's calling it a terrible
That's
film.
My goal.
It was heartwarming. Sandy Bullock is good.
It's a complete
she's
piece
good.
Of dog shit.
But she's good. She's good in the movie.
She's doing, like, I didn't even know you could minstrel white lady. And that's basically what she's minstreling a Southern white lady.
This is
which
not.
Which is sort of an oxymoron.
This is not
trash.
An anti-Sandra Bullock college football podcast. There are issues with the film, Stephen.
I love
them.
Sandy Bullock.
It is not.
Sandy
it
Bullock
is, not.
Is a national treasure. That film is fucking terrible.
She
it's
lifts,
maybe worse than The Joker.
She lifts it. She lifts it. It's got problems, but she lifts it up. Okay, so
she lifts it straight into the second tower before the explosion, baby. That is an absolutely terrible film. There it is. I made Alex grab his forehead already because I made a 9/11 reference.
That going, is baby. When we get to 5,000 Patreon subscribers. But also, and actually, this is more important. I'll just be honest.
Nobody thinks that's a good movie.
It's
sorry,
just, it's more important, actually, if there is a more urgent place and you're figuring out where to spend some dollars. We need to talk about this. This is more important. And then we will actually get into the meat and potatoes of this podcast. It's EDSBS Charity Bowl Week. You know our friends Holly Anderson and Spencer Hall and the whole crew of the Shutdown Fullcast. Holly and Spencer in particular are... in there.
Yeah, I think Charity Bowl is officially a Channel 6 production. Yes. All of our flotilla offshoot pirate enterprises. I believe this is a Channel 6 effort. So, if you don't, by the way, if you're not a Channel 6 subscriber, you should be.
You absolutely should be. Holly and Spencer have been doing this, leading this thing up for what? Like, I don't even know how many years.
A lot of years. As long as I can remember in terms of the professional endeavors of our sort of group. Yeah.
So it supports New American Pathways. The URL to donate is edsbscharitable.com. It supports New American Pathways, which is a Georgia-based organization that helps refugees who have come to the American South find a way to take advantage of all of the good things that we, believe it or not, still have to offer in this country, and give people an opportunity to kind of get a running start and be in the best position they can when they come to the United States and start a new life. And New American Pathways
don't listen to the myopic socialists. This is still the greatest country in the world. And New American Pathways is a shining example of why this is the greatest country in the world. These people come from all over the globe in terrible situations, and they become, not only do they become Americans, Alex, 90% of them become Atlantans, which when you think about where you're going to land in the greatest country in the free world, and you end up in Atlanta, what a bouquet of wonderful cultural things that you get to bring, not only like of your own culture, but then you get to become an Atlantan. I'm going to start handing out Falcons Upper Deck tickets to these people.
So if you go to edsbscharitable.com, you can mention your school. It can even be a made up school. There is an SCD Trans Am patron group that has sent thousands of dollars. And it's like in the top 10 of the standings right now because they're incredibly generous people.
Do you have an updated standing? Because as of yesterday, so I haven't seen. So
I do.
I'm looking right now. Sorry, this is great live radio, but we are privy to the standings as they go. In fact, let me check with sources
I have the standings, as does everyone, because Holly shared them with the general public late on Tuesday night. But through 2 days, the leader was Michigan at 81 grand. A&M was next at 55. Stanford at 11. Florida at 10. Protect Trans Kids University, shout out, at 9.4K. Washington and Lee, Syracuse, Georgia, Northwestern, and Georgia Tech rounding out the top 10. Our Trans Ams were at the 14th position. Which is quite a showing. I mean, it's only 30 people. You know, we're competing against.
We can do better than that.
We only have. 30
I know, but
people,
you don't like, have to. But you don't have to be. No. You don't have to be in that group. You can find that label and join in if you want to.
That's what
I was trying to get at. So if you have not given yet, and I know a lot of you have because you are sort of affiliated again in our loose network of friends and products, and you want to jump in, tag SCD. Build that number up right now. That's like a pretty good NC State football season before the inevitable occurs. That's where we're ranked. I think we can all do better than that. I think we can do a pretty good Florida State season before the inevitable occurs.
So if $1 million get raised, this was something that the Fullcast hosts talked about last week and that I heard about while I was listening on my way to a baseball game last Friday night. If $1 million are raised, and currently they're about 225 grand, probably more at this point. If $1 million are raised this week, Spencer Hall is going to play golf, and I am going to be in the group along with Richard Johnson, our intrepid co-host, who is not here today. And, you know, I'm going to give Spencer encouragement as he plays golf. I'm going to tell him things like, hey, buddy, you keep your head down. You just watch the ground. I'll watch the ball. Or like, hey, man, that was a pretty good shot. Good contact. It opens up over there. I'm going to encourage him relentlessly. I'll take videos, things like that. I will go and do this. We will go and do this.
I think you're burying the lead on that. There's also, I believe, an article of clothing involved.
Oh, and he has to wear, what, JNCOs?
I'm sorry, what? There it is, folks. There's your weekly generational gap. What are those jeans?
What do you mean, what are those jeans? I just said what they are.
They're JNCOs.
Oh, that is a generational gap. Yeah, I mean, I don't know, Stephen. I was born in 1994. So anyway, that's the EDSBS Charity Bowl. It's one of the only good things still happening on the internet. EDSBSCharityBowl.com. Critical that you support it.
Wow, you are in a mood today.
It is a huge part of the budget for New American Pathways as well. An organization that does a ton of good work and that Spencer and Holly have been working with for a long time. So thanks to all.
So if you get, I really want to hammer this home because I think by the time we record the next big show, the donation drive will be up. Here's the amazing thing about this charity. You get here and you do have the American dream ostensibly promised to you. Then what? What do you do? How do you get a job? How do you learn the language? How do you figure out how to get to a grocery store and back? How do you understand how to get the lights turned on if you even have a place to live? how do you function for 3 months, for 9 months, for a year in the United States of America? You know how, Alex, they always say that, you know, American English is actually the hardest language to learn? American culture is not that far behind in terms of the nuances, state laws, taxes, you name it. What New American Pathways does is actually follows through and does the work on what we put up on statues and billboards and American flag t-shirts that are printed in China and sold in Walmart. This is the reality. This is where the rubber meets the road in terms of actually turning people who want to come and build their own American dream and then build back into America. We actually onboard them, is what you would say if this was a Silicon Valley company.
Right. New American Pathways is amazing. It's HR for America, but actually looking out for your best interests.
I don't know if they want that slogan.
Bad branding. Okay. So thank you very much. That is all of the business that we have for this week, but particularly the Charity Bowl. It's very important. EDSBSCharityBowl.com. All right, Godfrey, we have actual college football stuff to talk about.
Allegedly.
We'll start actually with sort of an NFL thing that bleeds into being a college thing. The NFL is officially doing a Peacock exclusive streaming game next year. That's new information. Yes. It goes on top of the Big Ten contracting to do 8 Peacock games a year. I don't think we know what those are going to be just yet. But that dovetails with the Pac-12 still being in the throes of its media rights negotiations, and the campfire talk there being that a streamer is going to be pretty heavily involved. So what I'm telling you is that I think we are all finally being hit over the head enough that we're all going to subscribe to Peacock. Congratulations, NBCU, on your victory against this rebel task force that has for so long held out. But I think you're finally going to get everybody.
Just to clarify, the reason why we would start with the NFL playoff game is that is such valued equity in the broadcast space that it almost guarantees that Peacock is going to take as much as it contractually can in college football, put it behind the wall. If you've been paying attention and or you cheer for a small Catholic school in Indiana, this is not news.
They've already done this.
Correct.
Okay.
They've already done this once with a Notre Dame home game, and I think it was one of the shittier ones, right?
They've done it twice.
I did sort of shrug at it. Yeah, the first time it happened, I sort of shrugged at it, and I was like, I think the first one might have been
Toledo, and the second one I don't think it was the Marshall game that they lost. It might have been the Marshall game that they lost. Anyway, it's a G5 game that they have done the last couple years.
Industry people at first, they were like, well, yeah, like they're going to leverage a passionate national interest in Notre Dame and put one of the lower tier games behind the wall. This is, when you put an NFL playoff game exclusively on a streamer like this, this is akin to taking Notre Dame's best, the USC game, Ohio State, you know, something like that level, and putting it behind the wall. So this is an indicator of things to come. So Peacock already, by extension, is NBC. So I'm going to say NBC and Peacock somewhat interchangeably as we talk about this. The Big Ten is already in business starting this year, and I'm going to read some of this off, because when I saw the first announcement like 2 weeks ago about the Penn State game, I forgot. I thought it was starting the following year in realignment, but it's not. It starts this year. There are 8 games. Now, before you freak out, that doesn't mean 8 games on Peacock. I want to be clear about that. We don't know what's going behind the wall yet on Peacock, Alex. So you will have inventory that goes to NBC, which is fine. I kind of have a gripe I'm going to get to in a second, but I don't even know if it's a gripe yet, because I'm sort of a schedule weirdo, and that I would prefer as balanced a Saturday as possible, which is not going to happen anymore. This was inevitable that Peacock would get involved. It's inevitable that, like, you know, this is something that in a different world you could have happened on Paramount Plus with CBS. By the way, if you don't know, NBC Comcast, that's Peacock, and then the NBC network. Viacom, Paramount Plus, the streamer, CBS, the network. And then like all of those like stuff that you remember from the 90s on cable. So like Comedy Central and MTV and VH1 and that kind of stuff. Just so we're clear. Okay. Alex, no one gets screwed more in this current age of live sports consumption, at least in the methodology, than college football fans. I've heard before soccer fans try and pass this shit off on me. That's not true. You are going to have to pay $500-$600 a season to consume the FBS going forward. And that number's only going to go up.
If you want the whole thing. Yeah.
if you are a whole hog enterprise, which this particular split zone duo entity, splitzoneduo.com, has on repeated occasions said, hey, we're going to talk about UTSA and we're just as excited about Tennessee, Alabama. This sucks. There's no other way to put it. Now, is there any other sport, including the majority of what we consider to be sort of like first tier soccer across, you know, La Liga and the Premiership and all? I get that that's a little bit more unruly because it's across the entire globe. But in terms of a domestic sport, this is borderline untenable. It sucks. There's nothing we can do about it. I think it's probably going to get worse.
It sucks to a point.
How does this affect the Pac-12 specifically? We don't know. I feel like are you betting right now if you just had to put $20 down cold, almost like if you're doing like a preseason odds on a championship, are you now betting on NBC to take the Pac-12?
Look, it sounds, and I want to be clear that this is me doing informed speculation based on readership, my own readership, rather than knowing. But it sounds like Amazon, probably not for them. I was listening to John Orand and Andrew Marchand talking about that last week. It sounds like Amazon, probably not. And I haven't heard a lot of people suggest otherwise at this point. Apple, I think, sounded like probably not a while ago. You do start to wonder about Peacock for the Pac-12. And because if you combine with NBC, you'd get a lot of Peacock. You might get a dab of NBC, though there's not a lot of real estate on big NBC because of the Big Ten and Notre Dame. And you might get like USA, which is better than the CW.
Hold that thought. How much inventory do we know is going to be available on NBC proper? So we have NBC, we have NBC Sports, whatever that
is. NBC Sports is gone. Sort of it died.
No, sorry. NBC Sports that went to Peacock. What I'm saying is, like, you have the platform streaming. You have the terrestrial NBC. Okay. They have USA. I'm now trying to think about my Olympics channels. They have something else that's going to come to me in a second. I know sometimes they spill it.
They got like stuff.
They spill into their news channel sometimes when they're doing Olympic, like live Olympic coverage. You know, it's kind of an all hands on deck. They're not going to do that for domestic. They're not going to do that for college sports. But how do we know for sure how much inventory NBC has? I'm just kind of asking out loud because they're going to have these Big Ten primetime games, right? And then they're going to have Notre Dame. What's stopping you from having another slot?
Time zones.
Would a terrestrial network go— right. Now I get that, but would a network go three wide every Saturday?
It's not. I mean,
ABC's the only one that comes close. ABC's the only one that comes close.
Yeah.
That's a significant financial investment. And by the way, when we talk about ABC, folks, what are we talking about? We're talking about ESPN, but what are we actually talking about, folks? We're talking about Disney. And so the reason why ABC goes that deep on its main flagship network on Saturdays is because it has the entire ESPN/Disney apparatus behind it. I don't think they are. I'm just curious where you could slot. I still think you could potentially slot some Pac-12 into NBC. And then maybe, you dump it on USA. Which, by the way, is better than some of the options that we heard a month ago about potential homes for Pac-12 content, or at least less laughable than like the CW, which is something you're going to have to seek out in every single CW market. It's going to be different in every city that you're in. Yes.
Yeah, the CW is rough. Yeah. We're going to see where it settles. But I think that the takeaway from this week is that like NBC is incredibly serious about putting tons of football, both pro and college, on Peacock. And I am starting to wonder if that might not be the place where the Pac-12 settles. Sounds like we're not going to know about that for at least several weeks yet, maybe several months yet. So our national nightmare in that regard, Steven, it will continue. Aren't you excited?
Have you watched anything like the MLB stuff on Apple?
I have. Yeah. For a few weeks this year, I was really back into baseball before the Pirates, you know, Hindenburg.
They're
like two games above 500, Steven. But they were.
I checked the standings. They're alive.
But they were 20-8, and now they're like.
I know. Well, they weren't going to maintain.
It's over.
I feel like we're doing a Jaguars segment.
Point is,
they weren't going to maintain a 20-8 pace.
No, they were not. But they've lost like 14 of 16. It's ridiculous.
Let's focus on what's positive, and the Cardinals are in last place.
That's important. Okay? That is important.
Very positive.
Yeah, that's important.
Alex, here's the reason I asked that. I don't want to talk out of both sides of my mouth. Peacock feels a little depressing only because it's like, shit, that's another $10, $15, whatever. I've got to fork over for essentially the same experience. Apple is intriguing, and I don't think Apple's going to get involved with the Pac-12, at least not to the sort of level that we were anticipating, or at all. If you have watched a baseball game on Apple, they are unafraid to be different and smart. And one of my dreams is that somewhere in the space, I've talked about this for years of like, let me have one Conference USA game a week on any network. I don't care. Put it on ION. Like, give me one of those a week and let's do it differently. Let's kill the booth where you just have a very sort of stoic play-by-play guy and an ex-jock. Like, let's change the booth up. Do you remember, Alex, when the SEC network went down to field level for the Arkansas Ole Miss game?
Yeah.
And like a bunch of people rioted, and then a bunch of people were like, actually, that was more interesting than I thought it would be, especially because the game was a blowout. Like, let's experiment. What would be cool about Apple, and also cool, especially if you're the Pac-12, because God knows you are going to have to zag for the next 15 years. You're going to have to be different as a function, because no one's going to be paying attention to you at the same rate or clip that they are the big two. So if it was Apple and you could just be weird and different, I think that would be a massive selling point. Or it would just, maybe, you know what? Maybe I'm too college football hipster. I would so much rather see that. That's enticing to me versus Peacock just being like, well, there's another standard broadcast I have to pay to jump over the wall. And now, by the way, just to go back to the beginning of this segment, they're willing to do this to like what we assume will be an NFL wildcard game. They're going to put an important game, but like they're going to put important games plural behind the wall, like something in the top five that week. And like if we're ranking the five games you've got to see in a week in terms of national playoff implication, one of those might be behind the wall. And that sucks because that becomes mandatory. Oh. I have a smaller gripe, and maybe I'm just being an old man here. I need you to kind of sound this out. With NBC going to primetime, we now have almost every network going to primetime. Fox has planted a flag and said, you know, big noon Saturday is going to be our thing, right? Everyone else is pushing their inventory to that 7 p.m. slot. And I don't know how I feel about that. CBS wants to keep the 2:30 Central. It will be Big Ten now. Everything else feels like it's going to be in primetime.
Well, that can't be true all the time, because as you get into October and November, you just have too many noteworthy games in a week, you know?
Why is that not possible? Because I've seen that we've had those years before where it's like, God, there's nothing to do until 7.
Like, Michigan, Ohio State's still going to be on at noon.
Yeah. I mean, and Red River has to do with the Texas State Fair. I get that. But I think that the latest Red River would kick would be that 2:30 Central slot. Normally it's an 11 a.m. game, although I doubt it will be, or I'd be curious. It won't be on Big New Saturday anymore because it's an SEC game. I'm a little worried because I saw the whole week one is going to be West Virginia at Penn State, which is like, oh, that's an okay poll. It's probably going to be a smashing. By the way, how do you square that game as a Pitt fan wearing a Pitt shirt?
Well,
what do you do? Do you just hope for a good time to be had by all?
Here's what I think about this. And this will pivot us into the ACC, actually, because we're going to talk about this next.
Go, baby, go.
West Virginia is in a weird place coming into this year. You will remember that they did not fire Neil Brown after his fifth not very exciting season at West Virginia last year. As they go into 2023, they have just in the first 3 weeks of the season, this game at Penn State that they're going to lose probably by a lot of points, like in primetime on national TV. The whole country is going to watch them get destroyed in national television. In the first game of the Big Ten's new TV deal, that's going to happen. They play an FCS game against Duquesne, and then they host Pitt. And like, man, if they start 0-2 against FBS, and the two losses are a blowout to Penn State, and you lost to Pitt at home for the second year in a row, losing to Pitt, like then he skyrockets to like the very top of the, like he's your like Matt Wells of the year this year, like your guy who you like know coming into the year, or your Justin Fuente. It's like, damn, like this guy's not finishing the year. If they lose both of those games, which they will probably be, they'll definitely be underdogs in one, and I'd say a pretty good chance they'll be underdogs in the Pitt game, though that'll probably be a field goal spread either way. Man.
Are they worse than every Big 12 team coming in, new Big 12 team?
We don't know. The Big 12 is, you could tell me that every single team in the Big 12, except for
the new Big 12 team.
I know. I understand that. Yes. Probably. Maybe. But the thing is, Houston,
like BYU is a push.
Houston was unspectacular last year. And Houston's another team that I'm going to be looking very closely at them firing their coach this year. So I don't know. just like last year, just like every year now, who's the best team in the Big 12? Who's the worst team in the Big 12? TCU is the incumbent this year, given what happened last year. But I think the Big 12 is the most jumbled conference in the country right now in terms of the on-field pecking order going into 2023. I have no idea what it's going to look like.
I would venture to guess you are correct about Houston being, you know, cheap fireworks, so to speak. But given the backstory on that game between a particular coach, I think that they'll probably be pretty locked in for that particular effort.
Yes.
It's in Houston in October.
Yes.
Alex, I'm trying like hell to create one of your magical transitions because I have this. I had a half awake dream the other night because one of my kids woke me up with a fever about how to reassemble the Big East. So you just get me to this ACC news, and then I will tell you about what I'm trying to figure out in the wake of this bizarre shit that's going on at spring meetings.
Sure. So the ACC is having league meetings this week in Florida, like Amelia Island. I don't actually know where that is in Florida. Where is that? It's obviously in the
Amelia
ocean.
Island?
It's an island. It's in the ocean. I mean, we've established that much. It's not inland.
Keep going.
Yeah. Okay. Fantastic. It's in the ocean somewhere. It's in the ocean. It doesn't matter.
No, wait. I wanted you to walk out. It's obviously in the ocean.
Is it? I don't know. Well, there's coasts on all of Florida. I don't know if it's like North Florida. I don't know if it's South Florida. I don't know if it's Central.
It's Nassau County.
Okay. Good to understand. They're having what might be, I think, the first actually interesting league meetings in the history of May in college sports. We give these meetings lip service from time to time when different conferences have them. But I think that this one is actually interesting because it feels like some things are coming to a head between a certain delegation.
Something's happening. Yeah, like anything's actually happening.
A certain delegation of ACC schools and another delegation of ACC schools. So for months and months, a small group of them, but apparently not so small anymore, led by Florida State, has been building a case and arguing in public for the conference to shift to uneven money distribution. And you and I talked about the ins and outs of this debate on a very detailed Patreon special in March. I do recommend catching that if you haven't.
But splitdon'tdoit.com.
In short, every ACC team gets currently something like 30 million-ish bucks a year from the league, while the Big Ten and the SEC are up in the $50 million territory and heading towards closer to 100. The gap is 20-ish now, and it's only going to get bigger if you look at the projections of the way that this revenue is going to evolve over time. And the bigger schools in this league, led by Florida State, Clemson, Miami, have also chimed in. Brett McMurphy reported that UNC and NC State and UVA and Virginia Tech had also kind of jumped on this train in the last couple of days. That Florida State argues that we're the big school here. We are the biggest brand. We have the biggest TV ratings, presence, attendance, all that. And so we should get a bigger piece of the pie because we contribute more. And, you know, the gist of it is, yeah, you're right, but also you agreed to this and this is how it works. And there's really not much incentive that I can see for the Boston Colleges and the Wakes and the Syracuses of the world to agree with what you're asking for. And so you have an impasse that it seems, Godfrey, like in the last day or two, they've started to massage so that everyone can save face without, you know, dramatic changes coming to the way this conference works.
Before we jump into this, as someone who shuffles around his house in like a collection of like Soundgarden and Afghan Wigs t-shirts and was very excited for the Beavis and Butthead revival, I don't know of anyone living in the early 90s harder than Florida State. If you had just swapped out the nouns of what you just said and said Clemson, that would make sense.
Well, Clemson wants the same things. So
Clemson wants the same things. And yet Florida State's out here efforting as if they're a Tiffany brand in 2023.
I find that odd. I think they might be, Steven.
I think they're cul-de-sac millionaires who are desperately trying to do balance transfers.
So we could talk about what has happened to Florida State football in the last 7 years. And we could talk about what's happened to Auburn football, for that matter, in the last 8-10 years. But
Auburn's not out here saying this shit.
But like at the end of the day, they're still got a lot of fans. A lot of people watch them on TV. And the fact that they've had some bad football years doesn't really change.
Some bad football years?
Yes.
I'm sorry. Keep going. I have to adjust my microphone because I yelled into it too much.
When people stop watching Florida State
with this,
or
it's
Auburn
not
on
just,
TV,
I, yeah,
and when they stop being talked about on college football podcasts like ours, then we can talk about how they have no value anymore to a conference.
I can name 30 programs that we've talked about more at the very top of the sport than Florida State in recent years. I'm getting to a point here.
But Florida State, the fact that we talk about what a mess Florida State is indicative of the fact that they're relevant. Because if Florida State was a...
Nebraska. They're Nebraska with beach condos.
We talk about Nebraska, too. We talk about Nebraska a lot.
Right, but just because we point and laugh how fucked up something is doesn't mean that they're relevant to the top of the sport. We are straying. I know. We are perpetual archivists in this sport. But the bottom line is, yes, the only thing that we enjoy more than a brand in this sport is a fading one. That doesn't mean, just because we spend a lot of time fixating on that, that's to do with every reason except the football in front of us. So this is actually what I'm trying to get at here. These schools are mad, right? I'm going to jump ahead a little bit, Alex. These schools are telling us how frustrated they are about the disparity between the ACC's current grant of rights and what's going on with the Big Two, essentially. I don't think they give a rip about Big 12 or the rest of it. FSU's mad, and Clemson's mad, and Miami's mad, and then we have this other group now, right? Like, this, by the way, as someone who's qualified to say this, I sure am noticing a lot of pro wrestling this week in college football, because now we have a faction stable coming out and out of the middle of nowhere that's trying to get heat to essentially take over the promotion. That's what's happening. Yeah. This is very NWO. Yeah. Okay. I want to point something out. Oh, they're all mad. They're also completely irrelevant to the national title picture, which means national title branding and money exposure and modernizing in general, with the exception of Clemson. That's it. Since the playoff began. Yes, I know Florida State went to the Rose Bowl and Jameis had the funny little self-tackle thing against Oregon in 2014. After that, they fell into the void, okay? They fell into the void, and they have the shittiest credit score of any of these programs that we're talking about at the very top of the sport. Clemson's success, and Tigers, I want to put you guys to the side, okay? Their success specifically, to me, serves as an example that this is not a chicken and the egg thing where they have anxiety about, like, we're going to lose money, we're going to fall further behind the Big Two. Yes, you are on a balance sheet. But Clemson was able to win multiple national titles and appear in even more by doing everything within their power to emulate winning programs like Ohio State and Alabama during this time. Florida State, Miami, Virginia Tech. By the way, the other names in this group are not even worth mentioning in this regard. Like, North Carolina, are you kidding me? You can't manage to do anything. Like, you hired Mac Brown as your solution to become nationally relevant again. NC State, come on, that's already a punchline. Virginia, what are you doing here? Like, I just find it funny. Like, there was a way to position yourself going into the last round of renewals, and that was to be a better football conference.
Now, sure, Clemson can't make Boston Cup. This is what, like, the UCFs of the world did, was they were good at the right time.
And Clemson can't make Boston College better. And Clemson can't make Syracuse better, and they can't also sort of pull the attention and the spine and the identity away from the Tobacco Road basketball thing. I get that. But how many times have we talked about the cul-de-sac or the interchangeability of the division standings, and everyone's going to be kind of 7-5 in this league? Like, by the way, I'm excluding Pitt in this, because Pitt actually acquitted themselves quite nicely, and they laid out a blueprint that worked for them enough to get to a New Year's Six Bowl recently. Like,
has won the ACC in football.
Virginia Tech? What? What? Capital H, what? So I don't have a lot of sympathy here at all. This was, I will grant that this was a poorly constructed conference from the outset when they did graft on pieces of the Big East, when they took Louisville. Like, it was too unruly geographically. I don't think the priorities were in line. However, you guys are sitting here moping and mad right now, largely because you're victims of your own circumstance. And this idea that Florida State is some sort of economic driver or this titan of the sport is not true.
I disagree. Compared to the other ACC schools, I just disagree.
Well, compared to the other ACC schools, Central Florida is a titan.
No, but okay, but Steven, what you're doing.
No, we're not talking about in terms of the ACC. We're talking about they want to get paid like a Big Two school.
Yes, but where they want that money to come from.
Stop telling everybody you're Alabama. Fucking play like it.
But where they want that money to come from right now is out of the pockets of the other ACC schools, because that's all they got. Now, where this is actually going, it looks like, based on reporting I've seen David Hale at ESPN and others report on this over the first day or two of ACC meetings, is that instead of what I'm sure FSU and Clemson wanted, which is a media value driven reconstruction of how money is shared, that there might be some adjustments that are to the effect of, if you play better, you get paid a little more. Like, for instance, if you make a playoff spot, right now, the way that it works is that if a league sends a school to the playoff, then the conference gets $6 million bucks at last check, and it gets distributed around the league. It goes in with your TV money and everyone gets a piece. What might change, it sounds like, is in a world where Clemson or FSU goes to the playoff this year, maybe they would get to keep the $6 million if they were the team that made the playoff. And that, here's the thing, that would be nice, you know, an extra $6 million or an extra $5 million and change, because you already get some of it anyway. That's nice. I mean, that's good. That's good walking around money.
Semantic.
But it's also not going to close you up with that gap between you and the Big Ten and the SEC. You, Florida State, are still going to be coming in well behind Purdue, whether you can make the playoff this year or not. And we'll see how those numbers change as it goes to 12 teams in 2024 and beyond. But where it's gone, I just think, is FSU and Clemson and this crew of schools who are, and in some cases consider themselves to be, the upper crust of the ACC, have realized that the grant of rights is pretty solid. It's pretty hard to get out of this thing. It runs to 2036. And so now you get a little face.
Let's sit with that for a second. You just signed this deal
a couple years ago.
I have to choose to believe that this is a case of being caught flat-footed. And specifically, I'm talking about the FSUs, Miamis, and Clemsons, the schools that you're talking about, they either, so let's go with door number one. They just didn't know how big the gap was going to become between the ACC and the Big Two. That's one option. All right. This theory would better explain the timeline of what we're dealing with now, where you renewed and then immediately after you renewed, you started throwing a fit about the deal that you just signed. It would explain that this subgroup that wants to be, or considers themselves to be, at some point nationally relevant, or they were nationally relevant and they've fallen off again, largely due to their own devices. Like, I'm really stuck on this whole indignant thing of like, we're a national power. And I'm like, no, you're fucking not, because there's an entire generation of football players who haven't seen you be nationally relevant. Anyway, or door number two, I guess, is that maybe there is a group of key figures here. So like Dan Radakovich is a very interesting case, because Alex, he was the athletic director who ostensibly builds all of the Clemson stuff, with the exception of winning the actual games that Dabo did. And now he's at Miami. So let's say someone like that, or a group of people like that at these schools, Alex, they did see this coming. But they felt like there was just nothing that they could do, because the league's overall brand quality was not strong enough to drive the overall number up. In other words, 6-7 years ago, Radakovich, whoever was in the turnstile at Florida State, et cetera, they were like, this sucks. We're falling behind these two entities. And also, there's nothing we can do about it. Now, the problem with door number two, Alex, is that if that was the case, you have to sign the grant of rights, but you could have also structured that grant of rights in this current deal that they signed in a much different way.
Well,
it still doesn't. If you saw this coming, you still could have pitched to them a disproportionate rev share at the time. There is precedent for that in college football.
Yeah, but I think that unless the SEC was calling Florida State and Clemson and whoever, we're in a tough leverage position here, because the ACC has gone real hard ass about exit fees and such since Maryland left them in the middle of the night in 2012 to go to the Big Ten. They didn't leave until 2014, but it came down in 2012. Like, the ACC, remember that prompted a long legal fight, and then the ACC raised the exit fee. Maryland got out of there for, you know, low eight figures, and now it's going to be over 100 mil just on exit fee before you even deal with the grant of rights. It's hard to leave the ACC now, because the majority has voted to make it really hard. And so you could look at this as a number of people's, I don't know, fault. If you are Florida State or Clemson, you know, you might blame John Swofford, the commissioner who is pretty venerated for signing the deal. But you know, most of the ACC doesn't really mind the deal. You know, most of the ACC.
If you're looking at this, I just want to interject, and you're looking at this and thinking that John Swofford is akin to Larry Scott in the Pac-12, I would advise against that.
No, I agree. Different, because John Swofford did more in his career than just come in with the most valley-brained approach possible and fuck everything up. Oof. Like, John Swofford had a pretty long, successful run, but did he leave, you know, a bag of excrement on the porch by accident when he left? That's possible, but also one school's bag of excrement is another school's, you know, treasure.
We're not comparing the Pac-12 and the ACC as equally dire situations, are we? I think they could become that, but they're
now. It's a funny comp that you raise. Right now, certainly not, because the Pac-12 has contractual stability for one more year until they do an agreement. The ACC has contractual stability for 2036 minus 2023 is 13 years. So, no, like 13 is 13 times more than one. So the ACC is a lot more stable than the Pac-12. But I might, tell me if this is too galaxy brained of me, but I might argue that long term, the ACC is the more obviously screwed conference. Like, I could see a world where the Pac-12 actually does stick together for a really long time, because Oregon and Washington might not get the Big Ten call, and it makes regional sense for them to all stick together. Whereas, like, you got A, and I know you don't think this is going to happen, but, like, let's say FSU gets better in football the next few years. You never know if the SEC might call. You never know if the SEC might call Clemson.
I think
and they FSU would go in a heartbeat, whereas I'm less sure about the Pac-12.
Hang on. Too many ideas at once. I think FSU is going to be really good at football this year. They're a legitimate playoff team in a field of four this year, okay? Why am I calling you if I'm the SEC?
To keep up.
Keep up with what?
If the Big Ten adds Oregon and Washington, or if the Big Ten convinces Notre Dame.
How would one compare the Big Ten based in Chicago, Illinois, that is essentially a Midwestern and Northeastern brand, expanding westward in a bold and daring move? Now they're going to plant a flag in the Pacific Northwest and take two national brands, two, you know, national title, well, winner in Washington and participant in Oregon. And then why does the SEC need Tallahassee?
Why did the SEC need Norman or Austin?
Because they weren't there.
I mean, they were already in Texas.
Slightly different situation.
I don't know. Like, so here's the thing.
I just don't understand this appeal at all. Clemson people will tell you, they're like, because it's always Clemson and FSU to the SEC, and that's what you're gaming out here. Or everyone in the SEC is standing around going, okay, it makes sense to take Red River because it's a footprint expansion, and because having just A&M in Texas, if you have Oklahoma, here's the deal. The SEC bought Texas, the whole fucking state. I'm sorry to Lubbock and I'm sorry to Waco. You bought Red River and A&M. You own it. You own San Antonio. You own Dallas. You own Austin. You own Houston. Those DMAs are inarguable. What are you getting with Florida State?
You're just getting another big brand. No, it's not a comp because you're already in there, and you're not. It's to be clear, I'm not saying you're not going to sell.
Why are we expanding again? This is also something that's been told to me privately of like, everyone gets the brain where they're gaming it out of like, you know, and I've done the Super League thing before, but as of right now, they're going to tell you behind closed doors.
Let's table it this way.
I could see North Carolina before I could see this.
It is obvious to me, and I think obvious to you, that if they can, FSU and Clemson are going to run from the hills from this conference at the first opportunity they get.
The problem is they don't have anywhere to go.
Not now, but 13 years is a long time, and we'll see what changes in those 13 years. That's all I'm saying. Whereas I could look at the Pac-12, and I know that Oregon and Washington leaving was part of that hypothetical that I just laid out, but you could see a world where the Pac-12 survives for, you know, another 4 to 5 on its next deal, and then another 4 to 5 after that, and just keeps on living. And it's harder for me to see how at the next ACC deal, and this is 13 years ahead of right now, so I hope we're still doing this in 13 years, but maybe you won't be able to hold me accountable. I don't know. But it's just like, it's an iceberg that is very, very far away. I guess this analogy kind of dies because global warming, it'll probably melt by then. But
the last thing I want to press back on you, because I know you've done some research on this, the disproportionate revenue share. There are examples of this. Most of them are either not particularly good if you're a fan of the ACC staying together, or they don't really apply. So people talk about how, or this has come up this week, of like, you know, the Big 12 allowed Texas and Oklahoma to have different arrangements, right? It's kind of hard to even talk about this because we know how the story ends. But, you know, the Big 12 said, all right, Texas and Oklahoma, you get to be different. You get to take more money. What happened and why?
They left for more money.
Okay.
Because
then I've heard Boise. Well, Boise has a different deal than the rest of the Mountain West. Okay. Who's asking to take Boise right now?
Nobody.
Okay. This really only points in one direction, which is that there won't be an ACC as we know it in 10 years. The problem 13. Is I can see 13. Well, it takes, I say 10 years for a reason. That wasn't a slip or an error, Alex. If you've noticed, and I've been doing this long enough, the three years preceding the break are when you start to actually cook in the kitchen. It's when rumors come out. It's when private jets meet in airports. It'll be a 3-year cycle of this kind of stuff, right? Look at when Red River to the SEC broke. Look at when Los Angeles to the Big Ten broke. It breaks before for a reason. So it'll be 10 years from now, maybe, or sooner. The problem with this doomsday scenario is, where are they going? You are banking on the Big Two expanding again. That's the big fun thing this week, is like, how do we turn the Big Ten and the SEC into like 24-team leagues?
To some extent, wondering about that. But also, like, this is someone leaked this week from one of these schools. They were telling it to several different reporters that, hey, maybe the seven of us will take our ball and we'll go form a smaller ACC. And
oh God,
I mean, I'm not
the no homers club.
I don't want to give like a ton of credence to what was obviously something they were leaking so that they could have a little bit more theoretical leverage when they go into a boardroom to yell at each other. But again, like, USC is about to be in the Big Ten. Anything can happen.
Here's my message, and then we'll get out of here on get out of this topic. So the other night I was awake and I was thinking about the Big East, and shockingly, in a hipster way, I have a love of like that, not necessarily the Big East that puts UConn in the Fiesta Bowl, but like the Big East that you had, you know, like Cincinnati and Pitt beating the crap out of each other in the snow, right? When this happens and when the break occurs, you're going to have a division in the Power Five. We've already talked about this 1,000 times. Okay. Why not retrench, regroup, and create a brand that's like-minded geographically, philosophically, etc., and reform the Big East? Now, hang on. Louisville's not coming back. Probably. Okay. Well, I don't know where Louisville falls in this ACC division. I don't think Louisville's coming back. You know who I think would come back right now? West Virginia, the comeback around. What would be like, let's get into value, and I'll game this out and find a way to actually make this happen, Alex. But you, like, you're a Pitt fan. When you close your eyes and associate Pitt with an identity, I assume it's the Big East, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. All right. Cool. That's what I was banking on. So if you take Syracuse and UConn for the basketball reasons, oh, and you know, also because Jim Moore is, you know, reunited, brought new life into the program. You have Syracuse, you have UConn, all right? You have maybe a West Virginia that realizes it made a really bad decision, right? They're called first marriages for a reason, folks. All right? You can build back the Big East. I really think you can. Also, once Cincinnati realizes, oh shit, we're a Texas school without any of the Texas resources, and we're not in Orlando where you can pluck them off trees, like, maybe you get Cincinnati to do this too. All right. Who am I leaving out? Virginia Tech? They're done. They're not coming back.
You calling USF back?
I'm going to be honest with you, Alex. I wasn't really thinking about that Big East. I was thinking about the actual Big East.
Okay.
Now, no, Penn State does not apply.
Maybe call Syracuse. Who knows?
No, that's what I said.
Syracuse.
Cuse, UConn, Pitt, Get the river schools, man. Just get the river schools.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
Like, y'all know what I'm talking about. Maybe this is finally a home for wayward Memphis.
Trying
like,
to group back up in basketball with the current Big East. See if you can.
The current Big East in basketball, as sources inform me, had more bids to the tournament this year than any other league. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's a power league. I mean, it's an extremely powerful basketball league. Yeah.
Okay, so does everyone see where I'm going? Like, keep Providence around to play basketball. I don't even know if they have a football team. I don't think they do.
I don't.
So, right. You could make a banger 8-10 team league that makes sense and then also schedules out, like, West Virginia plays a Penn State or something like that in the region, or, you know, you call Virginia Tech and you get one of these games, you know, there's a way to do this. And I am calling out to fans of it's one thing on this show. We shout out the old SWC, Alex. And like, you get people in Dallas, you're like, hell yeah, cocaine and Trans Ams. I'm calling out Biggie. I'm like, I guess this is going out to flannel country. Like, I'm telling you, you could do this. And I honestly, like, wink, wink, nudge, nudge aside from the joke, why wouldn't you do this? Because you're going to get left. Oh, Boston College. I went this whole segment and I talked about bringing UConn back and I didn't even say Boston College once. You know why? Boston College, not really in a great place right now. You're never in a great place for college football geographically. I would say maybe the space you're occupying would reflect that as well, just in terms of like, this is probably going to be a bad year. So those schools could be something in this. Now, they're not ever going to be a Big Two program, but Alex, those West Coast schools have got to do something too, right? They've got to do something. Like, Arizona ain't going to the Big Ten. So like,
Steven, are you fanficking a coast to coast Big East right now?
No. I hate that shit.
Okay.
Everyone's like, wasn't the Metro cool? And I was like, no, it's fucking terrible. Also, I know people that worked at Louisiana Tech when they were a member of the WAC. Ask them how fun that was to be like, all right, we got San Jose State this week, and then we are going to Hawaii. Okay. Oh, and then it's UTEP. I'm telling you, just reform the Big East. It's going to make sense for all parties involved. And let this sort of, like, I can't get away from the Don Quixote vibes of this particular group of schools, minus Clemson, who have had this particular 15 to 20 years of constantly talking shit and then immediately falling on their face before they can throw a single punch. Now talking about how mad they are that they're middle of the road.
I think, again, I'm getting us out of here. I think you're too tough on Florida State.
And I like Miami.
Florida State won a national championship 10 years ago. Has been to how many New Year's Bowls? I don't know. No one's saying that it's been good for the last 7 years, but I think that you might be forgetting what Florida State is when Florida State is when it is.
What Florida State is when it is?
Yeah.
When has Florida State been what it is? They won a title with Jimbo in the BCS.
When has Florida State been what it is? I don't know. Like every year.
I think it is what it is right now. Which is a fucking jet ski dealership with a bad credit score. That's what I think it is. I'm throwing my own jokes together at this point. Like, I think Florida State is showing us basically what it can be. And by the way, Mr. Dead Letters coming soon, season two. Who got invited to the SEC all those years ago?
Florida. Not State.
Florida State. Florida State could have been in the SEC a long time ago.
Oh, you're talking. Okay. No, I understand.
Florida State is paying for the hubris of one Bob Bowden. Florida State could have easily gone to the SEC during the initial expansion, the modern era expansion. Absolutely. They would have loved to have them. They wouldn't know what a Clemson was back then. Just saying. You made your bed.
Folks, there you have it. The Big East is back, and according to Godfrey, Florida State is going to the Sun Belt.